Offspring of vipers, what has intimated to you to flee from the coming wrath? To quote John the Baptist from Luke chapter 2, was it? Or was it 3? No, 3. Excuse me. Luke chapter 3, which was yesterday's homework assignment. And that's what John the Baptist said to the people coming to him to get baptized in water. It is May 4th, 2023. The time is 13:35 hours. Ward Green with you. Welcome, little children. Welcome again. And welcome back. As well as welcome to all the newcomers. Today, I would like to begin with a song which was written by George Harrison, and he was one of the Beatles, a very deep thinker. His last words were, "Everything else can wait." And what was the other thing? There were two more things, of course. I'm trying to get the wording exactly right. Everything else can wait. But the search for God can't wait. And love one another. The last words of George Harrison, according to the witnesses. This is a song that George Harrison wrote called Something. And it's performed by a musician who you probably haven't seen performing this particular song. It's Joe Cocker.
You ask me where I'm going.
Incredible, absolutely incredible. I had no idea that such videos existed of Joe Cocker. There's so many videos on, especially on YouTube, about which, you know, I had no idea that they existed. And it's so true of so many different videos that I watch every day that are just things I've never seen before, even if they're sometimes by people I've also never seen before. But every day is a complete banquet. So today we're looking at the lunar alignments in the Wild Road article, part 2, chapter 8, paragraph 6, in the reign of Hatshepsut, the stepmother of Thutmose III, and also in the reign of Thutmose III himself. And in these lunar alignments, you'll see that we have, by necessity, we've assumed that year one of Hatshepsut is 1493 BCE, which was the year one of her husband, in fact, and it was typical for a wife of an Egyptian pharaoh to subsume the reign of her husband, that is, consider her year one as the same as his after his death, to, in other words, backdate her reign to the beginning of his reign. And in that case, for her year one, year one was 1493, but year two is the first year that we have a lunar date for her, a date in the Egyptian calendar, which turns out by calculation to be lunar day one in her year two. And then we have another date by calculation, which is lunar day 1, also in year 12, and a lunar day 18 in year 20. So if we were to shift her year 1 3 years lower to 1490, we already know 11 days for every year. The moon is short by 11 days, so we'd have to go a full month. But the lunar calendar would advance 11 days every year, which is 33 days in 3 years. So we'd go a full month and have 3 days more in addition to count in the lunar calendar, which would make the lunar day number, if we go 3 years forward or downward in the BCE dates, those lunar day numbers would go up by 3 days in 3 years. And it's because of an 11-day change every year. Would also advance by a full lunar month during those 3 years. But in addition to that full lunar month, there'd be another 3 days. So 30 plus 3 over 3 years, which is 3 times 11, 33 days that the lunar calendar has to advance further to keep up with the solar calendar. So therefore, this lunar day 18 would have become lunar day 21, and that would not be good for the Egyptians because it would be beyond the 5 days of the full moon of lunar day 15. 5 days would be lunar day 20. So lunar day 21 would be outside of the range of the full moon festival. Would not be a good date for the Egyptians. And also these lunar day 1s would become lunar days 4, which would not be good for the Egyptians either. Not as good as lunar day 1, anyway. Now, a lunar day 4 is actually quite good for the Egyptians because it's a waxing moon, but it's also a feast of some kind, of the 5 days of the feast of the new moon. It's perfectly fine. It's just not anywhere close to as good as lunar day 1. So it's conceivable, if we can allow a lunar day 21, that her year one could have been 1490, but there's another problem with that too, which we will see And that is, we know that, because we know that, lunar year 23 of Thutmose, considering his year one as 1490. Oh, and I guess there is not a problem, come to think of it. No, it's fine. Her year one could have been 1490, but it also, as we see very clearly, easily could be, and preferably would be, year one 1493 for her, based on the lunar alignments. Now, these lunar alignments roughly repeat every 25 years. Not every 20 years, every 25 years, and every 11 years and 25. In the Egyptian calendar, they repeat, roughly, approximately. So you could go 11 years different, or 25 years different, or 100 years, because that's 4 times 25, any multiple of those, and you'd get somewhat similar lunar alignments to these every 11 or 25 years in either direction. But for Thutmose the third, we assume that his year is 1490, because that's the only way we can get these absolute correct alignments for the battle that was recorded in his year 23 and the foundation ceremony in year 4. In year 23, there was a feast of a new moon, so that really, and it was recorded as an exact day of a feast of a new moon. Now, that exact day could have been lunar day 1, because they could have been recording the day of the new moon, or it could have been the day of the feast, which was lunar day 2, of course. Either way, so. And then we have, for his years, from year 31 and onwards of the dates we have, we've assumed his year 1 is 1493, because that's the only way that we can get the waxing moon alignments. Again, we have a lunar day 18, which would become, which would have been actually a lunar day 15. Is that true? No. No, it would have been lower. It would have been 3 days further on. It would have been lunar day 21. That's right, because a lunar day, the lunar days advance by three. If we go 3 days lower, which would be 1490. So we would have had an unacceptable date there. Now here we have an unacceptable date, lunar day 26. What is that? It's hard to say. But that's just an ostracon on the west bank at Thebes, year 43. It's not a significant, it's not the pharaoh himself making an inscription. Here we have, look, a lunar day 15, which would have been only a lunar day, well, it would have been a lunar day 18. If it had been year 1, 1490. And here we have a lunar day 3, which would have been unacceptable, because it would have been lunar day 6, if we'd let it. And this here, also in year 51, that was year 50, a lunar day 3, which was a rock inscription based on a year 1 of 1493. So all these are based on 1493 as year 1. And we have a lunar day 6 in year 51, which is 1442 BCE, which is May 29th, and it's a lunar day 6, which would have been 3 days more in the lunar calendar, or 9, lunar day 9. Which is not as good, but it's still waxing. It's just not as early in the month. Not as close to the new moon, in other words. But and the year 53, lunar day 6 also, which would have been a lunar day 9. And the one in year 51 was a rock inscription again, but at a different place. And the other one in year 53 was a scribal palette. So that's it. That's from the annals of Thothmes the Third, as derived from the hieroglyphical inscriptions, 1853, edited by Samuel Birch, page 36. So we've talked about that paragraph. I guess that's all we need to talk about for today, actually, come to think of it. I was going to read the next paragraph and not even talk about these dates, but I think it's good that we talked about these dates. It's very good, actually, because we need to, it's just very technical. And if it, you know, the way in which these lunar dates are calculated was, or maybe done either by using the tabulated moon phases with all the particulars calculated by Fred Espenac, or now, since the writing of this article, I learned about Rita Gauci. We can use her calculations also, and we can also use the program. If you have a Windows-based computer, you can run the program PLSV, which is Planetary, Lunar, and Stellar Visibility. And I did use that program as well as Fred Espenac when I was doing these calculations. At that time, I didn't have our calculator, which is on the Will of Jehovah site, which is now also usable for that same purpose and calculates things very much the same as the very best experts. But ours differs, and maybe, who knows, Jehovah knows whether ours is more accurate or not. But we used an equation, which I will possibly share with you later. It's right on the page. It's written in JavaScript, and the equation is right on the page in the source code of the main page of Will of Jehovah. That's all for today. That was good. Now, Luke chapter 4 is not what we're doing right now, though. We're going to be doing that. Our proverb for the day. It's Proverbs 15 and verse 8. The sacrifice of the wicked ones is something detestable to Jehovah, but the prayer of the upright ones is a pleasure to him. Interesting, the distinction between a sacrifice and a prayer, and also the distinction between a wicked one and an upright one. So normally a sacrifice would be considered very valuable, right? Even more so than a prayer. But in the case of the wicked ones, it's detestable, the sacrifice, whereas the prayer of the upright ones is a pleasure. So it exceeds by far the value of the sacrifice of the wicked. That's a nice lesson. Now our reading in Exodus, little children. Let's find it. Later they departed from Elam. This is the chapter in which we will learn about the Sabbath, the first ever Sabbath celebrated by the Hebrews. Later they departed from Elam. And we talk about this in one of the articles. I'm not even sure. I believe it might be the Joseph and Own article, where we talk about the very first Sabbath. Is it? Let me think. Because based on this, we're able to determine precisely what, or we're able to determine and prove that our first beginning of the departure of the Israelites, our departure date for the Israelites leaving Egypt is correct, because it was a Friday. In the Julian calendar, May 3rd was a Friday in the year 1493 BCE. And it turns out that we know the Sabbath is on a Saturday, right? So, right, that's right. But we know that it gives us information here in verse 1. Later they departed from Elam, and the entire assembly of the sons of Israel finally came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their coming out of the land of Egypt. That's the information there, the 15th day of the second month. We know they left on the 15th day of the first month. So that tells us it's either 29 or 30 days later. But we'll have to read on, because it talks about, we haven't come to the part yet about the Sabbath. And the entire assembly of the sons of Israel began to murmur against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel kept saying to them, If only we had died by Jehovah's hand in the land of Egypt while we were sitting by the pots of meat, while we were eating bread to satisfaction. Because you have brought us out into this wilderness to put this whole congregation to death by famine. Then Jehovah said to Moses, "Here I am, raining down bread for you from the heavens, and the people must go out and pick up each his amount day for day, in order that I may put them to the test as to whether they will walk in my law or not. And it must occur on the sixth day that they must prepare what they will bring in, and it must prove double what they keep picking up day by day." So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, "At evening you will certainly know that it is Jehovah who has brought you out from the land of Egypt. And in the morning you will indeed see Jehovah's glory, because he has heard your murmurings against Jehovah. And what are we that you should murmur against us?" And Moses continued, "It will be when Jehovah gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to satisfaction, because Jehovah has heard your murmurings that you are murmuring against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against Jehovah." And Moses went on to say to Aaron, "Say to the entire assembly of the sons of Israel, come near before Jehovah, because he has heard your murmurings." Then it occurred that as soon as Aaron had spoken to the entire assembly of the sons of Israel, they turned and faced toward the wilderness, and look, Jehovah's glory appeared in the cloud. And Jehovah spoke further to Moses, saying, "I have heard the murmurings of the sons of Israel. Speak to them, saying, between the two evenings you will eat meat in the morning, and in the morning you will be satisfied with bread. Between the two evenings you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be satisfied with bread, and you will certainly know that I am Jehovah your God." So we see that between the two evenings again, which normally means something about the evening, right? Accordingly, it occurred that in the evening the quails began to come up and cover the camp. In the evening, the quails came up. That's the meat. And in the morning, there had developed a layer of dew round about the camp. In time, the layer of dew evaporated, and here, upon the surface of the wilderness, there was a fine flaky thing, fine like hoarfrost upon the earth. The dew evaporated. When the sons of Israel got to see it, they began to say to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Hence Moses said to them, "It is the bread that Jehovah has given you for food. This is the word that Jehovah has commanded. Pick up some of it, each one in proportion to his eating. You are to take an omer measure for each individual according to the number of souls that each of you has in his tent." And the sons of Israel began to do so, and they went picking it up, some gathering much and some gathering little. When they would measure it by the omer, he that had gathered much had no surplus, and he that had gathered little had no shortage. So they picked it up, each one in proportion to his eating. Then Moses said to them, "Let nobody leave any of it until the morning." But they did not listen to Moses. When some men would leave some of it until the morning, it would breed worms and stink, so that Moses became indignant at them. And they would pick it up morning by morning, each one in proportion to his eating. When the sun got hot, it melted. And it came about on the sixth day that they picked up twice as much bread, 2 omer measures for one person. So all the chieftains of the assembly came and reported it to Moses. At that he said to them, "It is what Jehovah has spoken. Tomorrow there will be a Sabbath observance of a holy Sabbath to Jehovah. What you can bake, bake, and what you can boil, boil, and all the surplus that there is, save it up for you as something to be kept until the morning." Accordingly, they saved it up until the morning, just as Moses had commanded, and it did not stink, nor did maggots develop in it. Then Moses said, "Eat it today, because today is a Sabbath to Jehovah. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you will pick it up, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath. On it none will form. However, it came about on the seventh day that some of the people did go out to pick it up, but they found none. Consequently, Jehovah said to Moses, how long must you people refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? Mark the fact that Jehovah has given you the Sabbath. That is why he is giving you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Keep sitting, each one in his own place. Let nobody go out from his locality on the seventh day. And the people proceeded to observe the Sabbath on the seventh day. And the house of Israel began to call its name manna. And it was white like coriander seed, and its taste was like that of flat cakes with honey. Then Moses said, this is the word that Jehovah has commanded. Fill an omer measure of it as something to be kept throughout your generations, in order that they may see the bread that I made you eat in the wilderness when I was bringing you out of the land of Egypt. So Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put in it an omer full of manna, and deposit it before Jehovah as something to be kept throughout your generations. Just as Jehovah had commanded Moses, Aaron proceeded to deposit it before the testimony as something to be kept. And the sons of Israel ate the manna 40 years until their coming to a land inhabited. The manna was what they ate until their coming to the frontier of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is a tenth of an ephah measure. That's the end of Exodus chapter 16. This is interesting. We've done the detailed calculations of how long the lunar month was and so on, according to the expert astronomy witnesses. And we've found that in fact, it's perfectly consistent with our departure date of May 3rd, which was a Friday, and that this sixth day, of course, six more days after this 15th day of the month, right? And then the next day, the seventh day, so would have been the Sabbath. So 7 days after the 15th would be the 22nd day, evidently, if we believe that. And also, if we believe, we have to assume something about what this means, the 15th day of the second month. Does it mean the second month of the calendar, or does it mean the second month after they came out, you see? And, you know, do we measure from the day they came out, or do we measure from the start of the second month of the calendar? There would be at least two ways to do that. And so, if it's the 15th day of the calendar month, then it's about 30 days or so, or 29, after they came out, right, of Egypt. And then if we add another 7 days, we get either 29 plus 7, which is 36, which would be 5 weeks in 1 day, which would make it Saturday instead of Friday. Or we get Sunday, depending if we take it to be a 30-day lunar month. So we need to know how long that lunar month was in terms of how many days the lunar month was in order to get the right answer, or to get the answer that agrees with our particular departure date. But it turns out that it works out just fine. So, and we've shown that. That's been discussed, and we will look at that later in other articles. Hopefully we'll get to that soon. Well, now that we see that we need to know that, then I'll be thinking about that, how to get that information delivered at the proper time. So it's time now to look at our other scriptural reading for today, which is a wonderful one. It's Luke chapter 4, which is the chapter after the chapter about John the Baptist coming in the 15th year of Tiberius, as it says. If we look at that, chapter 3, in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius, God's declaration came to John, the son of Zechariah, in the wilderness. So Luke chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, describes all the details about who was ruling what district at that time, which, if we knew enough about these rulers, we would know that this was precisely a certain year, but we only know the reign of Tiberius, really, with any degree of accuracy. I mean, we know something about the other governors, but it doesn't give the year of each of those. It only gives the year of the reign of Tiberius. And that's clearly and thoroughly discussed in the article Born and Raised. And I believe the Sabbath may be also in the article Moses, it may be discussed, but it's certainly possibly also in the article Joseph and Own, it's discussed. I'm just trying to think if I can look that up or not. I'd like to find it right now if I could, but let's see. Joseph and Own, I don't want to waste our time either looking for it if it's not available. So which is this? Is that Own? Which is Own? That's Sinaitic Inscriptions. So that's... there it is. Own right here. Okay, here, this is the article. So let's do a search of this article for the word Sabbath. There it is. Yeah, it does discuss it. Yeah, if we take the second month of the calendar, Iyar, 15th day of that month, and the seventh day counted from that. The second month in the Jewish calendar, consisting always of 29 days, it says here. That's what it was defined as for the Hebrews. But we know that... we know the moon doesn't work like that. The moon has either 29 or 30 days. So this is interesting. So that works out fine. Just by Jehovah's will, it worked out fine. We know the vernal equinox, when it occurs, and we can calculate that using the method I used at the time I wrote that article, but nowadays vernal equinox is calculated by our own calculator also on willofjehovah.com. If you click on the moon in the calendar app, at the JavaScript app at the top of the page, you click on the moon and you will find the equinox, the vernal, and the other equinox, and the two solstices also are displayed there for any date after 5550 BCE and up until, I believe it's the year 6000 CE. So you can get the calculation of the equinox from that. So there it is. You can read about that in the article Joseph and Own. I'm going to continue now with, Jehovah willing, along with you, and with the study here. So John came. He said, "You offspring of vipers," verse 7, "who has intimated to you to flee from the coming wrath?" But then he said some things to the tax collectors. He said, "Do not demand anything more than the tax rate." And to those in military service, he said, "Do not harass anybody or accuse anybody falsely, but be satisfied with your provisions." And he said of Jesus that Jesus would baptize the people with Holy Spirit and fire. But he baptized with water. There we go. There's evidence about the baptism of Christ not being with water right there. Now Jesus, full of Holy Spirit, turned away from the Jordan, and he was led about, after his own baptism, by the Spirit in the wilderness for 40 days while being tempted by the devil. Furthermore, he ate nothing in those days. And so when they were concluded, he felt hungry. At this the devil said to him, "If you are a son of God, tell this stone to become a loaf of bread." But Jesus replied to him, "It is written, man must not live by bread alone. So he brought him up and showed him all the kingdoms of the inhabited earth in an instant of time. And the devil said to him, I will give you all this authority and the glory of them, because it has been delivered to me, and to whomever I wish I give it. You therefore, if you do an act of worship before me, it will all be yours. In reply, Jesus said to him, it is written, it is Jehovah your God you must worship, and it is to him alone you must render sacred service. Now he led him into Jerusalem and stationed him upon the battlement of the temple and said to him, if you are a son of God, hurl yourself down from here, for it is written, he will give his angels a charge concerning you to preserve you, and they will carry you on their hands, that you may at no time strike your foot against a stone. In answer, Jesus said to him, it is said, you must not put Jehovah your God to the test. So the devil, having concluded all the temptation, retired from him until another convenient time. Now Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit into Galilee, and good talk concerning him spread out through all the surrounding country. Also he began to teach in their synagogues, being held in honor by all. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been reared, and according to his custom on the Sabbath day, he entered into the synagogue, and he stood up to read. So the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed him, and he opened the scroll and found the place where it was written, Jehovah's Spirit is upon me, because he anointed me to declare good news to the poor. He sent me forth to preach a release to the captives and a recovery of sight to the blind, to send the crushed ones away with a release, to preach Jehovah's acceptable year. With that he rolled up the scroll, handed it back to the attendants, and sat down, and the eyes of all in the synagogue were intently fixed upon him. Then he started to say to them, today the scripture that you just heard is fulfilled. And they all began to give favorable witness about him and to marvel at the winsome words proceeding out of his mouth. And they were saying, this is the son of Joseph, is it not? At this he said to them, no doubt you will apply this illustration to me. Physician, cure yourself. The things we heard as having happened in Capernaum, do also here in your home territory. But he said, truly I tell you that no prophet is accepted in his home territory. For instance, I tell you in truth, there were many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah when the heaven was shut up, 3 years and 6 months, so that a great famine fell upon all the land. Yet Elijah was sent to none of those women, but only to Zarephath in the land of Sidon to a widow. Also there were many lepers in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed but Naaman the man of Syria. Now all those hearing these things in the synagogue became filled with anger, and they rose up and hurried him outside the city, and they led him to the brow of the mountain upon which their city had been built, in order to throw him down headlong. But he went through the midst of them and continued on his way. And he went down to Capernaum, the city of Galilee, and he was teaching them on the Sabbath, and they were astounded at his way of teaching, because his speech was with authority. Now in the synagogue there was a man with a spirit, an unclean demon, and he shouted with a loud voice, ah, what have we to do with you, Jesus, you Nazarene? Did you come to destroy us? I know exactly who you are, the Holy One of God. But Jesus rebuked it, saying, be silent, and come out of him. So after throwing the man down in their midst, the demon came out of him without hurting him. At this astonishment fell upon all, and they began to converse with one another, saying, what sort of speech is this? Because with authority and power he orders the unclean spirits, and out they come. So the news concerning him kept going out into every corner of the surrounding country. After getting up out of the synagogue, he entered into Simon's home. Now Simon's mother-in-law was distressed with a high fever, and they made request of him for her. So he stood over her and rebuked the fever, and it left her. Instantly she rose and began ministering to them. But when the sun was setting, all those who had people sick with various diseases brought them to him. By laying his hands upon each one of them, he would cure them. Demons also would come out of many, crying out and saying, you are the Son of God. but rebuking them, he would not permit them to speak, because they knew him to be the Christ. However, when it became day, he went out and proceeded to a lonely place. But the crowds began hunting about for him and came out as far as he was. And they tried to detain him from going away from them. But he said to them, "Also to other cities I must declare the good news of the kingdom of God, because for this I was sent forth." Accordingly, he went on preaching in the synagogues of Judea. That's the end of Luke chapter 4. Oh, wow. I have a terrible itch. Terrible, terrible itch. Excuse me. I didn't want to interrupt my reading for that itch either. So that was powerful. And the active force, the thing that was mentioned there in verse 1, by which Jesus was led about in the wilderness, was the active force or the spirit, which also means, of course, wind. Spirit has the meaning of wind, too, which is the breath of life, too, the spirit. The breath in our lungs, the breath of life. And George Harrison, by the way, died of brain cancer, or he was being treated for brain cancer at the time he died, a tumor, that is, a brain tumor. But also, I believe he had lung cancer at one point too, if I'm remembering correctly. And of course, we know a significant number of people die from cancer. But one thing about vitamin K2 is it is anti-cancer. That's something that's well worth knowing, as is also vitamin C. And I also believe very probably vitamin D is also anti-cancer. I just have that belief because there are more receptors for vitamin D in the body than we are even aware of, as far as the receptors, which are called VDRs, vitamin D receptors, that are needed in order for the body to properly utilize minerals, for example, or absorb minerals in the intestines. That's one use for the vitamin D receptor. But they're present in many other parts of the body, and we don't know all the locations of these vitamin D receptors. We've just been learning. And the vitamin D receptors in the intestine alone can accommodate 6,000 units. So there's no way that the limit should be less than 6,000 as per day that we can absorb. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm thinking 18,000 a day is probably a good amount, as a minimum, units of vitamin D, international units. That's what I've been finding these days, even when I'm only taking an amount of K2, which is, say, 1,200 units. Is it 6 or is it 6? Let me think. 6. If I take 600 units of... No, I'm not sure how many hundred units I'm taking, come to think of it. I'm taking a lot more than that, probably, of vitamin K2, of the MK4. But I take 600 or so, or 700 units of MK7 form, the MK7 form of vitamin K2. But what are the units? Micrograms, I think? Yeah, micrograms. Right. But because I'm taking, I might take 2 teaspoons of MK4 if I'm taking the liquid form. But if I'm taking the solid form, I'll take only about 360 of the MK4, just because I take 6 at a time. I don't want to take any more than that. But I take 6 at the same time, or more like 12,000 units of vitamin D when I'm taking 360 units of MK4 or more. If I'm taking the liquid form, I'm taking more like a teaspoon, which is, what was that per drop? 20 drops per milliliter times 5 is 100. 100 times 100. So 10,000 units, is that right? No. 10,000. Right, so 10 milligrams. If I take 10 milligrams of MK4, I will take 700 micrograms of MK7. Those are the two forms of vitamin K2. And then I'll take, with those two, I'll take 12,000 units of vitamin D in addition to the vitamin D in the liquid MK4, which is 500 times 100, I guess. So it's 50,000 units of vitamin D plus 12. So about 62,000 units of vitamin D. That's what I'm taking. That's what I think, for me, that's about the minimum that I need. 62,000 units of vitamin D per day. That's not per day. Sorry, it's double that per day. It's about 100,000. I believe that it was the vitamin A that might have been the only reason why I had the problems that I had, too. I don't think it was associated with vitamin K2. I haven't noticed anything since I've resumed. But when I got nauseous, that was, I think, not caused by... Well, we know vitamin K2 is not toxic. And vitamin D is not even toxic at 1 million units per day, according to a scientific paper in a medical journal. So a published paper. So I don't think it was the vitamin D, but you can I do believe I did take too much calcium, though. You can take too much calcium when you're taking significant quantities of vitamin D. But the problem with vitamin D is you don't want to take insufficient amounts of it with the K2. You have to up the vitamin D more than you might think. That's what I've learned. The vitamin D is what makes my arthritis go away. It's not the vitamin K2 alone. It's the D as well. I was always taking the K2 with the D, and that's what made my arthritis go away. So it might have been the D that was doing it. But K2 is essential, though. You can't take D without K2. That's the other thing. So, but what was causing the arthritis to go away, you have to get enough vitamin D, and it has to be absorbed properly by and processed properly by having the K2 with it in your body. So you need to take both. Okay, so that's that. That's the end of the study, though, for today as well. But there was one more thing. I think it was just my watches. I love this new watch. I think, and it was my eighth watch. I had to buy 8 watches before I got it right. This might be my favorite watch. I love the day date with the day at the top written in full across the top. It's got the day displayed as a slightly curved word. In a slightly curved shape at the top of the dial. The day is written because it's revealed in a window, and it rotates on a wheel to come around to the correct day every night. It changes at midnight, or it takes 4 hours actually to change fully in this watch. But the date changes much quicker around midnight. The number, which is in the 3 o'clock position on the dial, which is the middle of the right side, halfway up on the right side of the dial, and it's got a magnifier glass. There it says it's the 4th of the month. Yeah, I can't see it on my own video display, but maybe you'll see it on the final copy. So if I check the time, let's see the time here. Oh, it's quite close. I'm about 2 seconds slow, I think. I'm 1 second slow. Oh, yes. So wearing it, when I'm wearing it, it speeds up a little bit. It was more like 3 or 4 seconds slow this morning. 3 seconds, I think. So I'm 1 second slow. So it's caught up, and it's going to catch up. And if I store it in the dial-up position, it gains. So I'll be able to always take it off and put it down. But you know what? It wasn't gaining when it was off my wrist. That's the strange thing. So whether it needs the warmth of my wrist in order to run faster... But it is possible with this watch. This might be the only watch I have, or the most accurate watch I have. One of the only watches that can actually be completely managed. If I take it off at night, for example, I might be able to prevent it slowing down. Because it slowed down overnight, partly because I believe when I lie down at night, the angle of the watch is not dial up. The dial doesn't face upwards all the time when I'm sleeping. Sometimes it's facing sideways, and that is what slows the watch down to about between 13 and or more seconds per day lost, compared, you know, as opposed to gaining 5 seconds a day in the dial up position. I mean, so because I can make it lose time very quickly, I can just put it down in the dial in the dial sideways or crown up position. In the crown up position, I can put it down for a very short time, like an hour, and it'll lose a second. In one hour, it will lose a second of time in the second hand. So, I mean, I can adjust it by just laying it down in the crown up position, or just holding my hand in the crown up position. I mean, it's amazing how the position of these watches can be used to increase their accuracy, provided they're close to being accurate, provided they've been regulated well. So the regulation that was done by the factory on this watch was superb. It was spectacular. The fact that it runs that close to perfect, and I doubt very much that anybody has a Rolex out there that comes from the factory running like that. Now, the power reserve on this watch is only about 40 hours or something, maybe less than 40 hours, whereas the Rolex is about 70. But the Rolex costs $100,000. This was only $100 and some. This is like, you know, 0.1% of the price of the Rolex. What are you going to say? How are you going to argue with which is preferable? I mean, if you like to pay a lot of money and wear a $100,000 watch on your wrist, then that's fine. That's up to you. It's a beautiful thing. It's a valuable, precious metal, platinum, right? But do you want to lose that watch and lose $100,000 when you lose it? That's the other question. Now, I'm even worried about Crowe, which is a $2,000 watch. I'm worried about that watch because it's not, that's a lot of money. But she is running pretty accurately. Let's see what we got. 10, oh, right now, kind of fast. 15. About 5 seconds fast. 20. 30. About 4 seconds fast. Actually, Crowe has gained a little bit on my wrist this morning. And both watches were on my wrist all night long. So for Ward Green, it's Hammy the Crow. And Pagani, Rolly, saying bye for now.